Hi, I'm Tara, and welcome to Sagas and Sass Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. This is Episode 88, continuing our coverage of Lightbringer, the sixth installment in Pierce Brown's Red Rising saga.
I'm fellow Sagas and Sass host Nick. This episode is titled Stained, and we'll be discussing Lyria's POVs from Chapter 65 through Chapter 70 in Tempest, Part 3 of Lightbringer.
And I'm regular guest host Seth, here to remind you that our Red Rising coverage is spoiler-free outside of the chapters we cover in each episode.
That said, don't forget that the opinions are those of us as individuals, and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the show as a whole. Though let's be real, usually we're all on the same page, or at least very close to it.
Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon. With 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month, it offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return. You can find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Now, we meet back up with Lyria again in a very different situation than we've left her in.
While the population of Europa is being shuttled down into the deep, Lyria is heading to the surface. Cassius shows up with Sigurd, who will be her escort to the Obsidians, but they exit the lift just in time to see a Harbinger attack the refugees. What exactly is a Harbinger? Well, some sort of Obsidian that they're frightened of, even more so now that he has discovered they apparently know how to swim. Yeah, we're a bit confused too, but the important thing is that the Harbinger's arrival means the Askamani are already there, and sure enough, they appear and immediately begin wreaking havoc. The refugees panic, and when Cassius insists they can't stick around, Sigurd says his friends will meet them in the nearby-ish, Acropolis. They race to the meeting point, and once there, Sigurd insists that with the Askamani nearby, Cassius has to leave, which he doesn't want to do. Lyria insists, so he gives her a goodbye kiss on top of her head and puts his armor in night mode, flying off unseen moments before a group of the reptiles show up. Sigurd has Lyria go to her knees, but the Askamani have claimed Europa for themselves and insist this means Lyria is theirs as well. Lucky for her and Sigurd, who seems set on fighting them if need be, his friends Gudmund and Fenrir arrive just in time. Unfortunately, news is spread that Sigurd surrendered himself to Darrow, which means he has to leave Lyria with his buddies. And as nice as they seem, they still have to truss her up and deliver her like loot, which they do, Bringing her directly to Volga under the guise of Lyria being Volga's lost property, and just in time for Lyria to witness groups of chained greys and golds get tossed in the ocean as bait for a leviathan hunt before being dragged off to a trophy-decked stateroom where she promptly falls asleep. Lyria wakes to the sound of Sevro's voice. Volga is watching the message that Lyria brought with her, in which Sevro details Ragnar's faults as a stain and his virtues after he joined Darrow in the Rising, concluding with a plea that despite how the Republic wronged her, she take her place as Queen of the Volk and help protect the Republic.
But it doesn't seem like Sevro's message hits home, because when Lyria admits that she's there to bring Volga home, Volga scoffs, claiming that she's where she should be, with her people, so she is home. Oh, and she also accuses Lyria of being there on behalf of Darrow, so that's, you know, cool. Though maybe not as cool as the fact that she doesn't believe the news that Fa works for Atlas, or that she's totally forgiven him for eating Ephraim's fucking heart. And then, Volga has the gall to call Lyria a rat, before asking if she's afraid and concluding by dumping Gudmund and Fenrir's heads into Lyria's lap. Seriously, Volga? What the fuck? Even more WTF is the fact that Volga is giving Lyria over to Fa, and so they make their way to Europa's famed Nixian Isles, arriving right about the same time news comes through that the surface of the planet has been pacified. As Volga's ship lands, Lyria is with her copper slave Nicator, who points out that the hierarchy is happening all over again. While the islands might be beautiful, that beauty is marred by things like, I don't know, golds nailed to the base of a statue, jarls draped in their spoils of war, and the monstrous Fa perched on a trophy-encrusted throne and surrounded by pink slaves. Oh, and not to mention the feast table that is set upon a pile of crushed golds, not all of whom are dead. As frightened as Lyria might be, she still tries to shout out the truths about Fa being a puppet of the Fear Knight, but the party is loud and no one really hears her. Plus, of course, Fa waves off her accusations, and even though Volga tries to plead to keep Lyria as part of her retinue, or send her back to Mars, Fa doesn't grant either request, but rather takes this time to remind Volga that the Volk think she is unnatural and the Askamani think she's weak, and that she's going to have to prove herself. Volga doesn't understand, but Fa promises all will soon be made clear. But first, it's time for the Leviathan Cyaxares to be dragged from the waters and sacrificed in the name of the Allfather, or some shit like that.
And what a show they put on. The Jarl who caught the beast offers it up alive, claiming only kings may kill kings. So Fa climbs up behind its head and stabs it over and over again with his trident until it sounds its death knell. And yes, we're with Lyria. How the heck is Volga, of all people, watching this? But all of that is by far the least of Lyria's problems, because as slaves begin butchering the Leviathan, a group of a dozen captives is brought out, one of each color, except red and obsidian. Guess what time it is, y'all? Time for Volga's passage of the stains, of course! She gets to don a special gauntlet that tears out the captives' hearts, and oh, those of Sigurd and Lyria as well, because obviously, they're the chosen red and obsidian, which you'd hope, even after everything that's happened so far, Volga would balk at even a bit more than she does. Lyria is her only friend, after all. Alas, after very little deliberation on Volga's part, Lyria understands she is well and truly fucked. Volga moves down the line, using her fancy murder gauntlet to rip the captives' hearts out one by one. Lyria glances back and forth between this butchering party and the other one around the Leviathan, and as frightened as she is, especially when Sigurd, who is right next to her, is killed, she can't help but notice when the reds who are carving up Cyaxares' stomach turn and flee. Soon, Volga blocks Lyria's view. But lo! Finally! Hesitation on Volga's part. In fact, she starts crying and practically begs Fa to not make her kill Lyria. But while he's insisting she must, Lyria is distracted by whatever is going on with the Leviathan's stomach. Her focus only is pulled back to Volga when she raises the gauntlet again. But when Lyria speaks up, telling her she doesn't have to be broken and calling her Ephraim's daughter. Listen, we're not crying. You're crying, okay? We might be crying a little too, but you're definitely crying. Anyway, Volga finally loses the will to, you know, literally fucking rip her best friend's heart out. Listen, there's no yay, Volga, or you go, Volga, about this. Or, you know, two for you, Volga. More like, about freaking time you made the right decision, Volga. Anyway, there is no time for apologies or conversation or the need for Volga to face Fa's wrath, because just then, someone screams, and not one. Not two, but three armored demons burst from the belly of the beast. The helmet of the one holding a curved blade slithers back, and Darrow throws his head back and howls.
Goddamn. I cannot wait to get to the end of this discussion and talk more about that. But for now, Cassius showing up to see Lyria off is adorbs, as per the usual. And yes, we wish just as much as he obviously does that he could tag along with her.
Thankfully, it seems that Sigurd has friends who will help Lyria reach Volga, and Darrow has even talked to them. So it sounds like this plan is about as good as we could hope for.
Cassius still doesn't trust Sigurd, though, and asks Lyria what rule number one is, to which she replies, "Don't get caught by Askamani and shipped off to the far dark." But when he asks about rule number two, she tells him there isn't one.
I mean, it's a good rule. It's a good rule.
Yeah. Yeah. However, sensing Cassius's anxiety, Lyria grabs his hand and they hold on to each other as the lift carries them to the surface. And just yet again. After they go to the surface, a whole bunch of shit happens, right? This harbinger, which is, I have to guess, an Askamani thing, because it's the Askamani who've taken Europa. Yeah. So this harbinger shows up, starts murdering a bunch of people, disappears. Sigurd is like, oops, that means that they're already here. And also the fact that he is even more afraid than he would have been because he realizes they can swim is odd. But you know, there's the whole thing where Lyria gets ripped away from Cassius for a moment, finds him again. The shuttle that they were supposed to take is gone. So Sigurd's like, my friends will meet us, but we got to go to the Acropolis. And they're going through the city. And as they're going through, they see a couple different scenes. I can't remember which comes first, but one of which is a Violet playing like a harp or something in her apartments, and they're like traveling to the tune of her music for a bit. I mean, she's literally playing to her death. You know what I mean? Yeah. She knows she's going to, Or well, maybe she doesn't know she's going to die, but she's certainly going to a bad place either way.
Yes.
And then they come upon just some very old golds who are just sitting there with their razors in their laps, kind of waiting for a fight, knowing they're not going to win it. And they get to the meeting place and Sigurd is like, Cassius, you got to go, man. Like, you got to go. And thank God he has this armor that has the knight version, which just blacks him out, because otherwise he would have been fucked. Because the reason he has to go is because Sigurd's like, yeah, they're on the prowl. They're going to want your armor. And then his friends show up, Goodman and Friendrear. Wow. Goodman and Friendrear.
Goodman and Friendrear.
Yes. Friendrear. I That's like that. That's how actually. You know
they're his friends.
Goodman and Friendrear.
Can I just say, in light of what we know is coming, I was really disappointed because I liked these guys. I wanted to see their buddy movie. And I was like, oh, hey, look, a couple of obsidians that I'm interested in. And like, and you immediately, Pierce.
Come on. Come on,
man. Come on.
Yeah, it is. Let us have some
more obsidians.
Then. Yeah.
That aren't terrible.
Right.
Yes.
Come on. You didn't have to.
maybe not. I abstained from writing this in the summary, but when Goodman is like, sorry, we got to deliver you like loot, all I could think was they're trussing her up like a pig.
A truffle pig.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, man. But also just the whole interaction, it's very brief, but the whole interaction first between Sigurd and the Eskimani, they're like, what's your name? And he's like, my name ain't for you assholes. Then, I mean, he's about to fight like 16 of them or something. He's like, fight with honor. And they're like, yeah, whatever. We're Eskimani. We're just going to murder you. We'll just
kill you.
Even though we're all on the same team. This sounds like a really fun team to be on, guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's like being on a team of golds in the Institute.
Yeah, true. True. Or apparently in the Academy, if you're willing to break the rules. Octavia. Carnus.
Carnus.
Yeah. Good riddance.
Yeah.
But
he won. You mean he blew up both ships? Really? Is what would have happened? Come on.
But then Goodman and Friendrear.
Goodman and Friendrear
show up and they're just like, hey, we're here for our bro. Fuck you guys. And the other thing is, Fenrir actually has a Pegasus Legion helmet. He shows his face and he's stained. And the Eskimani are like,
I like the idea of the Eskimani being like,
just like scattering little reptiles.
The descriptions of them are so just like, no.
Grotesque.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I especially love the idea of them being like,
meh. Yeah.
And then Lyria, they deliver her to Volga's ship. But before she actually meets with Volga, when she's first delivered there, there's a chained group of golds and a chained group of greys. And they are kicked into the water one by one, but not before the golds salute the greys and the greys say, like, bear witness. In that moment, I felt like I was watching
Fury Road.
Yes. Witness me.
Witness me. Yes.
Yes. That was the first time we all saw Nicholas Holt.
No.
No. Was he an X-Men before that? Did X-Men happen before that? Okay.
A lot of stuff before that.
Yeah, he was in a lot of stuff before that. I mean, the first time
you saw Nicholas
Holt. Maybe.
Jeez, Seth.
Cultured.
Swine.
I have a lot of books to read.
That was actually like a really, it was a shitty thing for Lyria to have to see, but it was actually a really cool, like the gold salute the greys and the greys yell like bear witness and Akari and they get pushed into the sea. And I will say this though, Goodman and Friendrear are just like, gotta chum the water for the Leviathan. It's like, all right, guys. Cool. Yeah.
I just also like the idea that they're like, we've just conquered a planet. What are you going to do? We need to find the biggest carved thing on the planet and kill it to show how masculine we are. Oh!
Yep, basically.
Yes. And then Lyria gets brought to Volga's suites or whatever and falls asleep.
Well, she's had it. She's had a long day and there's been a lot of trauma.
She just tuckered out.
Yeah, she's tired.
I wish I could fall asleep that easily when I've been through like a long time with a bunch of trauma.
Yeah, seriously.
Not judging you, Lyria. Not judging you.
I think maybe her I think at that point it had just been too much, and she's like, okay, I cannot deal with this conscious. Woo!
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she wakes up to see Volga watching a video recording that Severo has left for her. And it's pretty smart of Dara to have Severo record the message for Volga rather than doing it himself, not just because of Volga's history with Severo's wife, Victra, but because Severo saw much more of Ragnar during Darrow's imprisonment.
Severo says a lot of things, but man, hearing him wax on about Ragnar brings back so many memories. Doesn't leave you wondering how could this not get through to Volga, especially when Severo explains, so what did that butcher's butcher do when his chains were broken? Did Ragnar try to make himself a crown from the shards, try his hand at empire? No, that was beneath him. Your father built shields for the old, the small, the gentle, the low. That's what he chose to be, a shield. Your dad believed that his people were part of a greater whole. Fa's campaign spits on Ragnar's name. Using power to enslave is the way of gold. Volga, your father wasn't great because he could kill. He was great because he dared to try and make a world where he didn't have to. He was a protector, Volga, a builder.
Honestly, this just makes me miss Ragnar all the more, or all over again. I don't know. Either way, Ragnar.
Yeah, again, I still feel taken too soon. There's a lot of people that I would have wanted to see more of. And in this book, it's apparently all the obsidians I'm talking about that Pierce just cruelly took from us with a stroke of his pen or a type of his keyboard, whatever.
But unfortunately, Severo's message doesn't get through to Volga. It almost seems to harden her against anything Lyria says next, even more.
Volga believes what Fa has told her, no matter what Lyria says, which leaves Lyria crestfallen and thinking, I see in her what I saw in Harmony, bitterness breeding entitlement. It's a bitterness I know. For years, it filled my mouth with ashes. My time with her, Victra, Ulysses, taught me I could not keep that bitterness. Better to die than live with it in my veins and let it poison me like Harmony. To be better like Aure, Severo, Darrow, Athena, and even Cassius. Surely it's not too late for Volga. So, like, I mean, I guess she's still hopeful in the end, but also, wow.
How long has it been since the end of the last book?
Not long enough for Volga to entirely change her character.
Like, yeah, seriously.
Less,
like,
I want to say it's less than a year. Darrow was on the Trashroid for like 8 months.
Okay.
And okay. I want to say that travel-wise, there were probably a couple months from there to Quicksilver's. I don't even know.
Quicksilver's planet ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever, yeah.
And then weeks at least from there. I can't remember the exact timing. I say weeks at least, but I feel like it was longer from there for them to get to Kalike. So
it could have been a year.
Kalike, whatever the fuck it's pronounced. I've given up, Nick. Right. I've given up.
You and your Ronas.
Every time I see it, all I can think is Mele Kalike Maka, so that's not helping me at all. But okay.
Yeah, Kalike.
But before that.
Nicator might be Volga's slave, and Volga might be giving Lyria to Fa, but the Copper Woman at least tries to school Lyria a bit and show her some kindness.
Nicator explains that Volga and her household belong to the fourth band, which means they're fourth from Fa's favor. And when she asks if Lyria understands, Lyria feels sick because she knows the hierarchy is happening all over again and wonders why Fa's army can't see it. Nicator asks, if you are raised in a house that is a square, what shape do you think you will build your house when you are grown?
And unfortunately, looking at the might, I guess, of Fa's ordered, I don't know if that's the word I would use, but okay, Lyria, ordered host. Lyria worries that the beauty she saw in this Daughters of Ares, all of the colors working together to escape the hierarchy, seems so frail in this light.
Anyway, kudos to Lyria's bravery once again, because even as she sees the horrors around her, seriously, the gold's under the table. Ah, WTF. As soon as they remove her muzzle, she still tries to spread the word of Fa's treachery.
Not that it works, though at least Volga then tries to get Fa to let her keep Lyria around or send her back to Mars. Too bad Atlas got in his head about Volga recently, though, because now he's all about taking her down a peg, teaching her lessons about how blood and crowns only mean so much. And then he's just all, oh, let's pause to kill a car mythical sea beast, y'all.
Okay, it's time to take another beat for history lessons with Tara. Cyaxares is the Latinized form of a Greek name meaning good ruler. And Cyaxares himself was king of the Medes, originally a tributary state of the Scythians. But Cyaxares got out from under their thumb by inviting the Scythian rulers to a banquet, getting them drunk, and then murdering all of them. So we'll see about all of that. Anyway, speaking of Cyaxares and all of the carved beasts whose deaths Volga has witnessed before, therein lies my annoyance, confusion, and just general dislike of the whole Volga thing that's going on here. Because yes, people in fandom have tried to push the fact that Volga always bent to the wills of those around her, just wanted to be accepted, blah, blah, blah. I get it. But after everything that happened with Lyria and Victra, this just doesn't sit well with me, and I doubt it ever will. Most especially because Volga only looks like a little bothered by all these amazing carved animals being slaughtered around her. Volga would never. I don't.
Yeah, this is some bullshit.
I honestly feel rescuing Volga from Fa's influence would have been better. I feel like a Volga being like, yes, oh my God, get me out of here. This is horrible.
And maybe some or like hesitation because of fear.
Yeah.
I would totally buy. But the idea of Volga as this kind of character with only a little hesitation about things that like the Volga that we know and love would never be okay with. We even talked earlier in the episode about how like, she was a knowing participant in the kidnap of the children. Yeah. But she also did everything she could to, one, try to get out of it, and two, make sure that they were as okay as possible.
Yep.
The only reason why she continued was because basically, like, Ephraim was her father figure and browbeat her into doing it.
Yeah.
Well, and also I think she knew that she needed to be around to protect him, too. But yes, exactly. She didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And she hated herself for doing it. She was like crying or something afterward, I think. And Ephraim was like being Ephraim.
Being a dick. Like Ephraim does. This really upset me, honestly. I don't think Pierce did a good job at all.
No.
If you're going to have Volga be changed this dramatically from the Volga that we last saw, there needs to be really good justification for that. And I don't think he gave it.
We didn't get it. And also because I realized that earlier in the book, Fa has stripped off his voice vocoder and fake beard and mustache and been like, oh, yes, the boys and I think we're going to go ahead and we might ransack the rim, don't you know?
He hasn't done that for her, though.
He hasn't done that for her. Yeah. And he's also presented to us in the end of the last book as monstrous. He is a monster. He's ridiculously big. He's ridiculously hideous looking. He is a monster. So at what point is it?
Volga, come here, my daughter. I will teach you how to kill.
Or something like that. And she's like, oh, this seems like a good way to go.
And if it had been somebody else who was a bad influence, who wasn't the person that, I mean, Ephraim was going to die anyway. He exploded himself on purpose for a good cause in his mind. But if it hadn't been the guy who like finished him off and ate his fucking heart, and then Volga's is like, it's a big honor. It's like, okay, I get the idea of Volga really having that need to be accepted, right? Because she never has been. But what I don't get is that her being accepted into this means her giving up all of her previous ideals. And weirdly enough, as seriously awful and bad as her witnessing the enslavement of all of these people and the murder of all of these people is, and I'm not talking about the golds. I can understand why she could brush his shoulders off. Yeah, I can understand that. But all the rest of them, even the grays, I could understand, but all the rest of them. And then on top of that, she's watching all of these beasts that she, like, we heard her talk about how she wanted to open a fucking sanctuary for carved beasts. And like, you're watching, these aren't just any carved beasts either. These are like the most amazing, awesome, mythical carved beasts of the Rim that you are watching be slaughtered for nothing more than
Hubris!
Exactly.
Overweening pride! Yes.
Yeah. This is hashtag not my Volga.
Yeah. I mean, okay, fine. Eating your enemy's heart is a sign of how much valor they... It's an honor because you're honoring your enemy by trying to take their essence into yourself to make you better. Fine. Okay, we'll go with that. Fine. All right. We're going to go with everything he did to Seffi in her. Okay, fine. That doesn't matter at all. Okay, he's big and he's awful, and he's just bringing war to people. Okay, that's fine. That's great. He's surrounded by a harem of pinks.
Yep. Maybe he personally isn't enslaving the children, but he's allowing...
This doesn't...
The Volk... Well, not even the... I don't even think it's the Volk that are doing it. It's mostly the Askamani. He's allowing them to enslave these children of all colors.
Yeah.
Low colors, specifically.
It's just... Yeah, it requires her to pretty much turn off her entire frontal lobe and go, okay, this is fine, and then just, you know, skip off into a bloody future of conquest or something. It doesn't make any sense, and we don't get from her that this has been beaten into her.
No, like
we don't get from her that basically, you know, like chained her up in a dungeon and we go in and, you know, punch her into unconsciousness every day that she didn't agree to whatever.
No, the opposite.
Yeah.
She was given preferential treatment.
Yeah.
Somewhat. She's only fourth band. So,
yeah.
You know? Well, yeah. But like we did learn that he's been coddling her basically.
And yeah.
That Atlas thinks he needs to take a stronger hand with her.
Right, but also she still sees everything that's going on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
we're supposed to believe it. And okay, like I don't believe she's entirely okay with all of it, but there's a huge difference between her not being okay with Ephraim kidnapping the kiddos in Iron Gold, and her being maybe not loving the fact that the Askamani are enslaving all of these low colors, children included, and murdering these carved beasts that she kind of has this penchant for. It's the one thing I seriously, seriously dislike about this book. And I don't think there's anything Pierce could say, honestly, that would make me agree with it.
The justification isn't there.
I mean, unless there's goddamn mind control involved.
Which there's not.
Which there's not, because if there were, then we wouldn't get the end to this chapter that we get.
Yep. It's bullshit.
Yeah. Yes. As Tara so aptly put it, hashtag not my Volga.
Yep.
All right. Going back to talking about stuff, even worse. This time she just doesn't have to watch the Leviathan's death. Okay. She has to watch the Leviathan get slaughtered and butchered, but the real show is apparently all about her and what Fa has deemed will be her special passage of the stains. Murdering one person of each color, people who he claims are terrible, and that includes Sigurd, traitor to his people, and Lyria, a rat. Volga asks if her loyalty, her vow, isn't enough, as Lyria is her only friend.
To which Fa replies, "She and the Republic are your past. I am your future. You have killed in battle, it is true. But there is another kind of killing, a difficult but necessary kind, the killing of a captive or a foe who is at your mercy. There is no honor in it. That is the point, to take an honorless, necessary action, one that helps your people but blackens your heart. Your sacrifice to your people is being willing to bear the guilt of what must be done." Volga wonders if her father did this, and Fa tells her, "And more. Are you above this? Above him? Are you above me?"
Okay, so first of all, just... fuck this guy.
Yes, and 100%. Also, yes, she is above you.
Second of all, Seth, when you said like, "And Lyria, a rat," I don't know what I had like a Jeopardy, like I had like a Jeopardy thing in my head when he said that. I don't know why.
I
don't know why I thought of Jeopardy just then. Yeah, I don't know. Also, we've never heard about what the passage of the stains actually involved.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it didn't involve this, because no way in fucking hell would the Golds have allowed an obsidian to tear the heart out of higher colors. And that includes not just golds, but silvers. I think coppers too, as well. Yeah. Like, so did my father do this and more? Yes. Ragnar did some really bad things. Sevro fucking admitted that in his recording to Volga. But
the minute he had the chance to stop, he did an about face and never did anything like that again.
I wouldn't even call it an about face. I think it was more just like, I hated what I was doing the entire time. I was forced to do it.
Yeah. And it's also like,
you must take this necessary action. This honorless.
How is this necessary? How is this helping your people? What is this doing to help your people? If it's like,
you must drop this atomic bomb on this city and kill a bunch of civilians. It's necessary.
Okay, I can maybe buy that. This is the outpost from which all the golds are going to attack the Askamani. All right, whatever. It's helping your people. Whatever. But just,
here's a bunch of prisoners. Yeah, they can't fight back. Just, you know, tear their fucking hearts out. Like, you know, just get in there, rip them. Just real good.
It's going to look really sweet.
Yeah, it's going to look cool.
Fucking look rad as shit.
It's going to look badass. People are not going to fuck with you after this.
It's like when you're
people are not going to fuck with you after this, I feel like that needs to be said in Rick voice from Rick and Morty.
Oh, God.
Fuck Justin Roiland, but also,
yeah.
I can't even think of Rick voice right now, but that's like.
As you said that, I could like hear it in that voice.
Yeah, yeah. Morty. Gotta do this, Morty. People are going to think you're weak, Morty. Do it, Morty.
Yeah, and it's a way to get her to become culpable. And again, I know I realized we were talking about not my... Volga. But the fact that it takes her until Lyria... I mean, I understand why, but Lyria is the one moment where she has a feeling about maybe this isn't great. I'm like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come on. If she's that far gone, then she shouldn't have a problem once she gets to Lyria. And also, the whole thing about this whole thing, well, she needs to be accepted by people and blah, 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 blah. But she says that Lyria is her only friend. So where did that acceptance come from? Fa?
Yeah.
Like, who? Like, who
fuck you.
Exactly. Clearly not the other obsidians. Just Pierce, yeah. Buddy. Yeah.
I feel like there are way too many people in fandom who are excusing this because they believe that Pierce does nothing wrong. Listen, I could be wrong about that. I could be reading into it. But the attempt of fandom to excuse why it turned so awful kind of so quickly up until this point. Yes, I'm sure she's done awful things. But at this point, she's literally got a fucking mechanical heart ripper and is just like to 13 fucking people, including one of her own people, essentially. The worst part about it is she's still about to do it to Lyria. She raises it again after Fa is like, you gotta do it. She's like, I can't do it. She's crying. And he's like, you gotta do it. And she raises the gauntlet again. And it takes Lyria being like, you don't have to be this way for that to change, for her to stop. Kudos to Lyria for even having the strength to say that, because like, I'd be pissing my pants.
Yeah.
After everything, particularly after seeing like her go down the entire line and kill Sigurd. And he's like shouting out like,
you know what? You guys are going to hate this. You guys are really going to hate this. So I apologize to everyone. But I think this whole thing has gone a little too far.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. I did that right now. I thought about it. I apologized for it, but I did it anyway.
You had the chance to not do it.
I know.
You doubled down.
I didn't have Illyria in front of me telling me you don't have to be like this.
Seth, you don't.
I wish I could stop.
Please don't. Just please.
No, man. Well, we're on to the last chapter anyways of this section.
So about two-thirds of chapter 70, titled Passage of the Stains, is difficult to read. It's also extremely well-written.
Lyria bouncing back and forth between watching what Volga is doing, which, again, and noticing what's happening with the Leviathan butchering, is just timed so perfectly. Mwah. Mwah.
It really is. I guess I'll say this. Volga is awful in these chapters, most especially during this whole passage bullshit. But I guess, can't believe I'm saying this. I guess at least she changes her mind about killing Lyria, of all people, before Darrow bursts out of the Leviathan.
At least they didn't give her a clitorectomy, right? It's the same at least.
Oh my God.
It's the same at least.
Got to go back to that.
Yeah. Sorry.
We were past that.
I'm going back.
Anyway, Speaking of Darrow bursting out of the Leviathan, first, guess we know what their plan was now.
Second, clearly it was a pretty dang good one, at least so far.
Third, holy shit, it's just so cinematic that the whole passage honestly bears reading. Sorry, not sorry. And we'll start with someone screams.
Volga turns. One of the Askamani shamans is running away from the Leviathan's belly, even as another stumbles back from it, holding a bloody stump for an arm. Red work crews run in terror. A demon is born forth from the viscera.
There's no other way to describe the figure who bursts from the blister in the Leviathan's belly and its spume of dark liquid. A grisly black thing with two flashing blades. The screaming shaman soon has no head. Then the one with the stump for an arm has no legs. Two more demons follow after the first. A flash comes from a short rifle in one of their hands.
The first demon leaps from the altar and lands behind the last shaman just as the shaman clears the gap between altar and Acropolis. The shaman stops and collapses in two pieces, cut from the crown of his tattooed head straight through the groin. The demon lifts a black curved blade, dripping gore and effluence. His helmet slithers back. Firelight bathes Darrow's face as he cocks back his head and howls.
Wow, what a conclusion to Lyria's immediate predicament and a cliffhanger for this episode. And
if also I can chills. Get in,
also, yeah, I mean, yeah, that was honestly that was a great moment. If I remember correctly, and this is a quick history moment with Seth, crown to crotch was something that got used in the Iliad during the fighting sequences. He was split from crown to crotch.
I think you're right. It's been a really fucking long time since I've read the Iliad. The funny thing is, this is also actually a callback to the dead horses from the very first book when they're taking House Minerva and Severo and Tactus and a bunch of other baby howlers at the time hide in the bellies of dead horses. So they literally took a thing that they had already done and did it again, but with hiding in the belly of this fucking giant sea beast
for just way cooler.
Yeah, they did it times 1,000. They're like, do the dead horses, but make it extra.
I do like the idea, now that you've mentioned that they're sitting around like, what do we do? And Sarah's like, you remember that time we hid in the bellies of dead horses? And everybody looks around and like,
uh-huh. But honestly, that's probably what happened.
Yeah.
Like, Cassius probably remembered too. He was still part of things then.
Yeah, he was still. Yeah, he was still.
Yeah, so 100%. For all we know, it was Cassius that it suggested Cassius. It. Listen, I'm giving it to Cassius.
All right.
Yeah. Cassius earned that one.
He needs a win.
As the cliffhanger leaves us, we must sadly do our in memoriam. And it's quite packed with deaths. First, many of the refugees trying to escape to the deep, cut down by a harbinger before they could make it to safety, as well as the chained golds and grays who went bravely to their deaths when they were sacrificed to chum the water for the Leviathan, and presumably, whether already dead or dying soon after Lyria witnessed them, witness me! The golds nailed to the statue of Zeus and those crushed under the weight of the feast table.
Gudmund the Jolly, lover of sausage, and Fenrir, former Stain and member of Pegasus Legion, beheaded by Volga's guards after delivering Lyria to her.
Cyraxes, the greatest Leviathan on Europa and perhaps anywhere, hunted down by the Obsidians, killed by Fa, and just all around done dirty.
Can I, real quick, just complain about that?
Only a king can kill a king.
We have already done the hard work of catching him, exhausting him, and dragging him out of the water. Now you just come stab him with your trident to pretend you did something.
Poke, poke, poke.
That's right. You contributed. You helped.
Good job.
That kind of crap is all, I mean, like, as much as, if I may, our King Viserys, as much as I like him, still it's the, all right, we're going to hold the stag down for you. You just take the spear and you
to be fair, in that instance in House of the Dragon, Viserys was hardly able to kill the stag, and Fa, it wasn't a weakness thing. He just sucked.
Yes, he does.
Sucks. Next up are the first 12 captives, one of each color, accused of crimes they may or may not have committed, and sentenced to having their hearts ripped out by Volga as part of her passage.
Sigurd, the 13th and final murder in Volga's passage, who went to Darrow in hopes of regaining some honor, helped Lyria as best he could, and died with shouts of Fa and Atlas's treachery on his lips. Pour one out.
Yeah, pour one out. Pour one out. As we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our heroes tier patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Once again, I'm Tara, along with fellow host Nick and practically permanent guest host Seth. Don't forget that you can always hit us up at Sags and Sass on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or email us at sagsandsass@gmail.com with any comments or thoughts you might have. Actually, I should add, we're also on Blue Sky now. Also, Sagas and Sass on Blue Sky. So, our next episode, titled Breath of Stone, will cover Darrow and Lyria's POVs from Chapter 71 through 78 of Lightbringer. Please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment for early access to our recordings.
Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.